Hey there, Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave in the path. Rupert with me is Chris.
You are the office
courier. Hey, Chris, how are you?
What a chance thing that the freaking path of the eclipse, which is even a concept it's hard for me to wrap my mind around, but it goes right through Dave's house, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, I think I'm in like the, you know, the total eclipse of the heart is about 4 minutes or something when it's full eclipse. If you're in the center,
is it worth driving the, or is it going to be cool from your house?
It should be cool from my house, but actually my wife's family's all coming in town. They're like apparently eclipse chasers. I didn't know that, but there they go. So they're in town
and then
they're so rented a house that's way closer, you know, a little west of here. Like really it's only like 2 to 10 miles west of here is like, now you're in 4 minutes of eclipse territory versus 2 minutes and 30 seconds of eclipse. And if I cross the highway the other way, it would be like 0 minutes. You know what I mean? So it's just such a weird, like, I don't know. It's weird how thin the line is, but then it also goes across the whole entire United States.
How do you even know? Is there like a really nice little Google Maps thing that shows you? Or
yeah, weather.com and all that gives NBC, CNN, they all give you one. But,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's fortunate. I think we were kind of saying before the show, I would not typically leave my house just to see a shadow, but you know, I'm excited.
The people that have done it, I never have either. I think I've seen little partial ones or I don't even know.
I went to the partial one last time. It happened on a weekend, so it was pretty easy to like.
Wasn't it like shadows look different? Or I forget the details.
It's weird. They like kind of like, if you think of like a sun moving in front of a orb, a circle, and you get like a little, you know, sliver, like a crescent, all of a sudden all the shadows look like crescents. So you like see like the shadow of a tree, but it's just a bunch of like crescents. It's
that's truly weird.
It's kind of weird. It changes in the sky, all turns like, I don't know. You know how like when like the you turn phone brightness all the way down on your phone, it's like the whole earth suddenly is at zero brightness and you're just like, wow, this is, I haven't seen. And I don't know. My brain always goes to two things. How do people spend their time tracking this? Like who's just like, I am always aware of the shadow, the moon's shadow. And I just, that's what I care about. I plotted it for the next 20 centuries. That's weird to me that people do that as a hobby or a job. But then the other one is, well, if you were living in the like,
oh, you have to think about primitive people. Yeah, exactly.
Hundreds or thousands of years BC, and the sun just disappeared, and you like walk 10 miles and you tell your friends, did you see the sun just disappear? They'd be like, no, I didn't. What do you mean? You are crazy, dude. Like that would be so weird to me. Just, I don't know. I'm sure this is like the cause. And
I would immediately look at my neighbor. I would be like, what did you do, Frank? Frank. I'd be pissed.
Frank, you sinned. You did a big sin. And now the sun god is done with you and all of us because you did the big sin.
Yeah.
Damn it, Frank.
I would definitely I would use the opportunity. I'd be like an early Trump, you know, I'd just be like, I'm going to, whatever just happened, vote for me, you know,
vote for me. I will keep the sun going. here's my party platform. Keep the sun going. Right. You know, and I get like a cut of all the money. That seems like a good deal.
Seems
right?
fair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll be cool. I think as people are listening to the show, if you're a day one kind of listener, it's probably happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're a Monday listener where it's, I am in the path of the eclipse. So there you go. It could
fantastic.
Be, there's clouds in the forecast, so it could be a total dud. It was kind of like that last time.
God, you have one chance at this and it could be cloudy. I didn't even consider that. That would suck. Be
cloudy, but hear me out. It's still going to get weird dark. It's going to be like phone brightness zero. And that's weird enough.
Isn't it nice in Austin usually? I mean,
it's oppressively hot in Austin most of the time, but it's nice in Austin.
Yeah, but do the people talk about like number of days of sunshine and stuff? We have 300 here in Bend, so it's all the people talk about it all the time. Yeah,
I don't even know what we have. I would be curious, but it just so happens it's like Saturday, Sunday, Monday, when everyone's in town, like people are coming, like Austin's expected to be a surge here of a destination town. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then rain on Tuesday, Wednesday. Like it's just cloudy all weekend. And
we got an eclipse and torchies. So there's a lot of reasons.
And you can wear like cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. And
have you ever seen a lot of bats come out of a bridge? You know, you can check out a lot of stuff.
I have a friend of a friend runs the bat tours here in Austin, runs a bat tour. Mm. Like you rent like a kayak or a paddle board that glows in the dark, and he'll like take you to like cool places and that he knows. It's kind of
That's a cool job.
That's a cool job.
I'd say.
I wish I was like that industrious to be like, I'm going to leave my house.
Turn nature into money.
I'm going to have my only goods are like a four wheeler to tow a truck full of kayaks. That's going to be like my only overhead, you know. That'd be cool, but oh well.
Oh, fantastic. So the internet's still around.
It's good.
We have some questions we can get to today. I saw, you know, what you said something the other day that stuck in my brain a little bit, because it was about it's been about 2 years, a little more than 2 years since an article dropped on Microsoft about types in JavaScript. And it was all noisy for a minute because it was like, holy cow, you know, maybe I don't you always think about like the web standards bodies are at their best when they see movement, they see a lot of people doing something with tools, and then they're like, maybe we can standardize this and help you do it. And it's not to like, because the tool is bad, it's because like standards are good.
Mm-hmm. Pave the cow paths, right? Classic.
TypeScript's a pretty big cow path, let's say. And maybe it should be a tool forever. I don't know. But some smart people got together and said, hey, maybe we can do this within the syntax of JavaScript. We won't need that tool anymore. And there's a lot of kind of skepticism, but also loud clapping. And, you know, that's just what happens in our industry. It, as far as I can tell, hasn't been touched since that day. You know, like there's a GitHub repo. I don't know. I can't say that for sure, but we're certainly not talking about it anymore. So those stage zero proposals can do that.
Yeah, I chased it down the other day. Did you look at it or try to chase it down?
All I did was look at like commits to the repo that was talking about it, and those were thin.
Like, you know, there's like one commit a year. So it was announced 2 years ago, and there's one commit every March. And so hopefully we're getting it soon, right before TPAC, which I think is like literally maybe today or something that we're recording.
Oh, well, that could be cool.
TC39, whatever. But it wasn't on the TC39 schedule for April of 2024. So that makes me think it is not mature enough.
Perhaps, or the people got excited about something else or something, because these things take excited human beings to push through.
It's diverged a lot. Like, I think like the idea of like, let's just gold stamp. Java or TypeScript and put it in the browser. I don't think that's happening. There were a lot of people pushing back for like a more comment like syntax, sort of like JS doc, but maybe more succinct. There are a lot of people pushing for, you know, maybe like the colon syntax, you know, the colon number or something like that, just that part of TypeScript and for returns and operators and stuff like that. I don't know if any of that really is being talked about. So
start small and grow. That would be my advice.
Yeah. So I, you know, it all comes fresh in mind, 'cause I was in like a conversation with somebody and they're like, why didn't you use TypeScript on this? And I was like, I kind of was hoping we would be not talking about TypeScript at this point. I think like, I kind of hoped the conversation would be further along.
Yeah. You were going to wait it out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You like that tool, but no, I can hang until we're not doing it anymore. I mean, that's worked for some people, you know. Maybe like a million years ago, somebody saw, I don't know, some weird flash way to do web fonts, and they're like, I'm gonna wait it out, you know. And then they were rewarded for their waiting by, you know, web standards font face and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
It tends to happen if you wait long enough.
I think that's true. And, you know, I think there is a genuine real threat. I'm going to say threat on my SWAT board. Okay. Threat okay. that we are hitting another required JS, require syntax problem with TypeScript. So I think it's good. Like, let me say it's valuable. It's helpful. Like, it generally provides value. It cuts literally 15% of your bugs based on some research from Microsoft that types add to a code base.
Okay.
So yeah, that's good, right? Like, but I think we're hitting a place where, you know how like we can't do ESM all the time, or we're not in ESM fun times because we have all this legacy code that is written in legacy Node. So the require syntax. So I think we're potentially going to foot gun or bottleneck ourselves in 5 years, you know? So that's I think that's a threat to the ecosystem as it is, but there's value in it, obviously. Okay. So,
yeah. Okay. So there's that one. And I kind of brought it up and I didn't know that TPAC was here. I don't follow stuff that closely, I guess. I saw a proposal for Signals that's also a stage zero. Signals being this, I don't know, architectural concept of making a variable then that you can change it, and UI and whatever else is kind of like watching it, and it can respond to changes in it. Almost like a mutation observer for a variable or something. Very popular. Lots of people see it, look at it, and click with it as a way for that stuff to work. It was in SolidJS. I don't know who invented it, but I know Preact kind of was into it. It's in SolidJS. Angular decided to pick it up. Angular's merging with something that has it. And it's, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff for it. Again, there's a cow path for you.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden we see a proposal come along for Signals to then go into JavaScript. It's stage zero. So as soon as I see that, like, wow, this is big and weird and a change for JavaScript. All I thought of was like, yeah, how's that types thing coming? You know,
well, and all of that would be easier or more sensible with types, right? Like, it would just be like this whole, wouldn't it be better if it had types? So that was proposed or put together kind of Rob Eisenberg effect on Twitter and elsewhere. But he has done good work, especially with web components. He formerly worked at Microsoft on their fast components, and not sure where he's at now or if he's just consulting. It looks like he's just consulting. But so pretty exciting to think that like Signals is. And that's another thing where I was kind of like, I'm going to wait, you know, or just use what Vue gives me, which is Vuex, and then it's just Opinia, right? But like, right. I'm just going to use what is given to me. I'm not going to invent my own, you know? And that's sort of like, you know, React has notably gone through a few different state management systems. And so, and you know, it took everyone a while to come around to like, hey, Signals is pretty good. You know, are we like going to hate Signals once it lands in the browser? Maybe, I don't know. But the API looks pretty cool. I mean, it's just a variable you can subscribe to and then do changes based off of it, right?
So I have never, like, I don't have anything production using anything with Signals. So to me, it's like just a little bit in this gray area of like, I haven't felt it work for me. So I don't know if I love it or not. But I look at it and I'm like, it's a little like PubSub-y, I guess. I've definitely done that kind of thing before. And then I use Apollo, Apollo GraphQL at work, you know, and we, you know, generally like it, you know, for its caching and it's like efficient querying and stuff, but just kind of built into it. I don't know if this is good or bad, but you just get some like bonus stuff, you know. Sometimes when libraries get so big and such a big part of dealing with the data of your app, they're like, and you get this too. And one of this twos is what they call reactive variables. It's just part of the package and it's tree shaken out, I think, if you don't use it. So not a big deal. In the React context that we're using it, we can just like pull in two functions. One of them is like declaring a reactive variable, and one of them is, I don't know, the setter for it or something. I forget exactly the syntax off it offhand, but I've used it like twice in the last 2 weeks. And I've been like, ooh, this is nice. And I think it's signal-like. So I feel like I have some stuff in it, but it's like any two components. Like you don't have to think about like the whole tree of architecture of your app. You can just be like, this component way the hell over here declared this reactive variable and is exporting it. And this other component way the hell over here that has no connection to it can kind of import from it. And now those two components have this variable that they're sharing and reacting to without having to do something in React, like, I don't know, drill the state down through a million things or use some kind of global state store that's shared. You can just do these little one-offs and it kind of feels nice sometimes.
Yeah. And there's no like provider situation. Nope. There's no, you know, I think, you know, it's still kind of this, like you just, and there's not even that kind of event up data down situation. It's kind of just set it here, right? And then it'll tell everyone else it changed, you know? So
yeah, the telling of the everybody else is the kind of like hard part, I would think.
Yeah. Cause it's, when I first heard like signals getting popular, I maybe said it on the show, I was like, oh, it's kind of like window.foo. Like you just type window.foo equals bar and it's a fancy global variable. And it kind of is, but it kind of is that. Plus it has like this whole pub sub sort of thing to it.
Right. Cause you need the sub, you need the callback, you need the mutation observer part. Like this changed, please run some code now. Whereas if you change window.foo, yes, that data is available to everybody looking at it, but they aren't told that it changed.
Right. Yeah. And then there's another feature. They had like it's signal.computed, and computed is capitalized. And I don't know why, but I'm very, that's, it's like this like weird, like that it's, I'm a petty bitch. I'm like a RuPaul's Drag Race over here. Like that would kick it out for me. Just this like unnecessary capitalistic. No, it's fine. So anyway, it's set signal.computed, new signal.computed, and then you can do like it accepts a function, is even.get. So you're saying, is it even, I guess? And then it'll say true or false. And then you say, okay, now spit out text, the text version. So anyway, it's just sort of like the text word even or the text word odd, depending on that value. So it's sort of like views computed attributes. I think Svelte has also that too. This is my not knowing enough about React. I mean, sort of like does React have use ref? I feel like they do, right? That's a thing you can do. Okay, yeah. So like use ref.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think of it as the like, that's, you have to use that little hook just to get like a DOM node, and then you can do things to the DOM node. But it's not that only. I hate to, you know, I'm sure people listening to the show is like, I can explain it, you know, and I'm sure you could, but I think it also means like keep a reference to this when it re-renders. There's some like efficiency aspect to it.
Okay. So it's not just a variable value. Okay. So I don't know. Maybe there's
it could be though.
Use computed thing.
Sorry.
Anyway, oh well, let's not worry about it. Let's not explain poorly. Okay. I just,
all right. Yeah, showing my ignorance here again. I probably should be able to explain it really well.
Anyway, computed in view is cool. And so if it came to the platform, that would be cool. Because you can basically just say like, what would be a good example? Okay, I have a list of posts, right? Like go get the posts and I'm just going to keep asking for posts.
Yep.
And then my computed can be filtered posts. And I do post.filter whatever type equals comment. And
does it prevent a re-render? Like if for some reason that thing needs to re-render, it doesn't need to re-filter them. They've already been filtered.
Yeah. Well, and it'll only re-render if posts change, if the parent, the thing it's subscribing to changed or whatever.
I see.
It's cool. It's like genuinely pretty cool stuff. So, anyway, view computed is awesome. And so it'd be cool if we had that kind of computed power.
Yeah. I think the equivalent in React land is like, oh, I know this component is going to re-render if a prop changes on it, for example, or like a parent's props changed and I'm a child. So I just get blasted away in the, in the thing, which is a little bit hard to know. So if that component is doing anything that requires like a significant work, it's on you to figure out like what, how can I add efficiency to this? And in React, it's like, oh, use memo or something. And then it's then it's good. Or
maybe that's what I was thinking of. Use memo. Just like maybe, you have a memoized variable. Not, and then if something, and then you pass the things like if these watchers, right? Like if these things change, then update this, right? That's kind of.
I've done the work once. Now, there is murmurs that React is going to become a compiled framework in the future. And that decisions like that will not need to be made by the author anymore. They can be sussed out by a compiler. And that seems cool to me. But it also seems like, holy cow, has this framework gone under some very extreme changes recently with like, now it runs on the server and it's compiled. And it's like, what even is this thing anymore?
Yeah, good question. I wonder. Yeah, I don't know.
As long as, you know, as long as, I don't know, Next just magically makes use of it and delivers me the good DX it does now, I'm not mad about it.
I'm curious what we're going to feel like in 3 years when, you know, half code bases are in, half implemented in server components and half not, you know, and it just becomes this sort of like, I'm sure best practices will emerge eventually, you know, but
maybe there'll be some like crazy conspiracy theory where Vercel was like, we sell node servers. So, hey, React, could you design a product that requires node servers? I'll give you $1 million, you know?
Yeah. And everyone on the React core team is like,
sure, we can do that.
On a big boat in Monaco right now. So,
yeah. Just kidding. We love everybody. Everything is fine.
Everything's fine. No, well, and I wonder, you know, if the Remix dudes are going to be like, I told you so. So I wonder if that's going to happen. I don't know. I'm curious. Not to stir up drama. So.
No, I mean, we're not even capable of it anymore. All eight of you out there.
Yeah. Dave said it right. Chris and Dave did not say anything wrong. Speaking of saying stuff wrong, we do have some corrections. I said in a previous episode, no framework helps you with accessibility.
Oh, right. And everybody's like, except for all the good ones.
Except for the good ones. Triple Threat, Josh Collinsworth said, actually, Svelte does this. I have not confirmed this or seen a proof of concept, but apparently Svelte does this. Melanie, of course, said Ember does this. And so, you know, of course. Anyway.
One question, though. Does it do it? It seems like, okay, I could see doing it if somebody wrote a Svelte VS Code plugin or Ember VS Code plugin that did some static analysis on those types of components and then put red squiggles. Okay, so that's kind of like the framework doing it, but it's kind of just like a linter. Maybe the framework provides the linter and thus it feels that way. Or while it's being compiled, the compiler is throwing those errors or whatever, reporting them to standard out or whatever a library does. Which one is it, you know? It's unclear to me, the approach.
Yeah, it would be interesting to like, maybe this is a blog post I should write for the old Boost blog, but
I just recommend like it.
Figure out which one does what. You know, there's been just because is it throwing it? Do I need to have the right tooling environment set up? Like, man, when I have the perfect tooling environment, everything's perfect. Nothing, there's no problems, Chris. When the perfect tooling environment is set up, but when I'm like opening Notepad. Like, do I have a different experience, you know?
This all comes back to the types thing in JavaScript. If you open a file that in this future world in which types are in JavaScript, in Notepad++ on Windows or whatever, are you going to get squiggles and stuff? No, you're not.
No.
Right?
So
like, or are we talking about having JavaScript itself throw or do console.errors and stuff when those types are broken, like in browsers? Is that happening too? Or is this exclusively like shifted left to the developer experience only? Unclear to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, strong type languages, Rust, Go.
Oh, they'll bitch on the at the compile.
They're step. Mad. They don't, you don't get any, you get nothing, right? When it fails.
Truly
right?
Nothing. Yeah.
I can technically upload my TypeScript with the .js extension and it'll, the browser will try to run it and then just die, right? So
it will. It'll find an angle bracket or something and be like, no, that's not going to work.
That doesn't work. So that's, you know, it's just interesting. I think the original example was putting a click handler on a div, right?
Yep.
Would a browser, you know, or would a framework yell at you if you did that? I don't think HTMX will. It might, but maybe I need to get back into it. But, you know, and I really haven't seen, I have seen cool linters or cool test suites, you know, like Web Test Runner, which is like a popular web component test runner. It uses a blend of like Mocha Chai, all this, but it has, there's like a one example where you can pull in like Ali test suites or Axe right into there. And then you say like expect element to be accessible or whatever.
What? That's they cool. have an expectation thing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool.
And so like, it'll like whatever, render the output and then like verify that it's accessible or like run Axe right on it. So that's cool. We need more of that, but A, that requires two steps, right? That requires that you ran the tests actually before you put them into production.
Right.
And then two, it requires like you wrote the test and you imported the packages and did all that stuff right. So it'd be cool. Maybe I'll do a little whistle stop tour post on like who actually solves this problem for you. But then.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to put a click handler on an LI. Sorry. It just is, it's going to come up, you know, it's going to come up.
And I found one even as a mistake, just in our app where I'm like the worst PR reviewer. And by the worst, I mean the best. I never let that go through. I was like, nope, we have a component for that.
Good.
It's called a button. We have all kinds of props on it. We also have button simple in case what you're trying to do is like have no styling around the thing, but it's an interactive element that has no relative href. Use that one.
So, it's kind of like if we can make these tools do it, awesome. Then like, should we, or like, do you need like a way to be like, no, actually in this weird circumstance, I really do need to make an LI clickable as a progressive enhancement or something or,
yeah. Yeah. Web's a big place. I always think.
Yeah.
This episode of Shop Talk Show was sponsored by Jack's Radical Design Course. That's radicaldesigncourse.com/shoptalk. If you could lick a 3-pound toad and magically become an incredible designer, would you do it? I would. And what if instead of an organic wart machine, it was a rebellious video course, and instead of licking it, all you had to do is watch it and follow along? Would you do it then, fair listener? Well, this ad script that I was handed might suggest this toadless, wartless web design course by Jack McDade, the creator of Statamic, is anything but boring. It will not teach you how to copy overused trends nor surrender to the safety of so-called best practices and cookie-cutter templates. Instead, it teaches you how to develop your own personal style, how to write content that will be remembered, how to use design to stand out in a crowd, and how to design quickly and efficiently so you can get on with the 71 other things on your to-do list. Don't I know it? And I love Jack's style too. This is good cop, but he's an excellent designer too. I'm going off script, sorry. And yes, even though Jack wrote the script I'm reading to you right now, you don't have to take his or my word for it. Real customers of this course have called it exceptional, hilarious, and more life-changing than toilet paper. So if you have the itch to build new skills and create something original, check out Jack's Radical Design Course at, again, radicaldesigncourse.com/shoptalk and use the code shoptalk, all caps, to save 10%. Prior design experience not required. Burnt out designers welcome. Okay, so you mentioned writing for Boost. Everybody listening out there, there's a guest writing program for that if you want to do that. Just because of whatever, you know, I write over there too, me and Dave.
Boost blogging.
It's interesting to think, you know, like now I'm in the position of occasionally writing an article like in another app, Like you do it in Notion. That's your draft land, you know? And I think that's kind of cool. And then if you want to share it with somebody else to get comments on it, you know, like you're going to send it into an editor anywhere, Notion's not bad for that. You can kind of mark it as public. It has kind of a permissions model to do that. You can keep it private. I think it's basically private by default. And then they have a permissions model that allows you to open the little share menu and say, oh, I want anybody to see this, or I want this exact person to see this. And can they just see it, or can they edit it too? Or
yeah, I don't know. I think they can just see it through the public link, but then you can invite people to it. But it's sort of like, you know, security by obscurity when you publish it, just kind of.
I think they even maybe have like a can comment, but not edit or something. Anyway, if you don't, but you know, they have to thread the line there. Like, how complicated do you want to make this? Because I'm sure they could have a whole security matrix on there if they wanted to, but that's no fun. Mostly people just want to like flip a switch and be like, yeah, everybody can see this. I don't care.
Yeah.
It comes up to me though, because it's like, you know, back in my editing days on CSS Tricks too, I was always like, hey, if somebody's going to write for us, you can send it in however you want to. But if you don't have a preference or are interested in what we would like, I always push people to Dropbox Paper, which was this, it's just a little add-on product. I don't know for sure. It feels maybe a little forgotten over at Dropbox. Probably like it's a good app, but doesn't need like a super active team on it or anything. It looks about how the last time I looked at it years ago, you know. But I like it because it's just, you're right in there, and it has that permissions model too, that you can easily add people to it. And then it's, you know, it doesn't look like Markdown very much, but you can export it in Markdown. I didn't mind that. Like, I don't really care to think in the Markdown syntax very much. So I was like that. I always liked it a little more than Google Docs, because Google Docs wouldn't, you know, there's like people doing formatting and stuff. I'm like, don't do that. Like, I don't, if anything, I prefer Markdown because it's so portable and it's like forces you to not do formatting, but I don't actually care if it's actually Markdown. Anyway, where I'm going with this is like, you use Notion. That's a pretty good choice for it, but Notion is, I don't know, it's not super lightweight and stuff. And if it's not just something you would just pick up and use to write one article, it's kind of like you're either in Notion land or you're not. So what else is there? I saw one the other day, somebody using a product called stashpad.com that I was like, ooh, this is new and cool. Looks a little fancy. Has that kind of real-time editing and permissions model. And crucially for me, it has this one feature that sets it apart from us, because there's a zillion Write Markdown online apps. There just is. There's so many. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like, we have AI, we have blah, blah, blah. This has, you can select a line of text and comment on that. That's the feature I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep. Notion's got it. Stashpad's got it. And I'm interested in asking the Shop Talk audience, what other stuff has, like Google Docs has it. To me, that's very important. I want to highlight a sentence and be like, ooh, could you do a fact check on this sentence, please? Or something. It's really rare to see in an app, I think. And I just want to have a mental model of the ones that are doing that. Because it's a pretty niche feature that is important to me.
Wasn't there a new Butter Docs, that's a new thing.
Just saw that too. I think that was shared in the Discord perhaps. Looks like kind of a more open sourcey Google Docs thing.
Yeah, with little Trello-y vibes in there too. Kind of which is like literally my setup for my blogging machine. So maybe I could do this.
This looks kind of good. What the Trello aspect is a wild card there. But I guess I kind of get it. Sorry, is each Trello card a doc?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's just the idea that like, hey, you have,
you got to organize it somehow.
Yeah, if you have multiple documents, you know, they're in different statuses. Why not reflect those statuses, you know? Or it looks like actually, oh, interesting. Maybe they're actually doing this at the document level. Oh my God. So every column is a heading, right? Like introduction. This is in their example video. Introduction, art of churning around the world, which seems like a mistake. Health perspectives. But then like they have each like one documented. And then anyway, that's interesting. I mean, very cool.
Who has the feature, just to check. Sorry, I wanted to make sure.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It has the comment on a particular thing, which involves. I think it's rare because it's like a little hard. It involves that like whatever document
range.
Set range yeah. and all that. Well, yeah, and then yeah. like those can change. And then what do you do with the data you have? Like, what if that whole word goes away? You have to make really hard product choices. I'm like, do I delete the comment or do I orphan it somehow? Or you know, like I could see why people are like, ugh, too hard, abort.
Yeah. Don't do it. Yeah. Never write code. Never improve products, I think, is the advice I would say. This Butter Docs looks really cool, but it's very much how I'm currently writing. So that seems like very much like, you know, what? I don't know. I'm not.
Like, what would you get out of it?
Yeah. What would I get out of it? Like, what's going to make me change? What's going to make me change? If it's fast, if that's one of the things, then I'm maybe in, but.
Yeah. Or really good offline or something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Usually I'm like my personal blog. I just use WordPress itself to just to store the drafts. And then I'm a things user locally for all my to-dos, but also just ideas to-dos. And stuff. It's pretty good for me because all the syncing and the nativeness and whatever. I did see another one though recently called Godspeed. Pretty yeah. cool name for an app that also had native apps and also had the syncing and all that. And then it had a couple of like different aspects to it. For one, it was really like really focused on speed and stuff. And some of that stuff is like, yeah, it better be fast, you know. Like it's a to-do app. Like, what? How could it not be? You know,
it's a blazing fast to-do list. It's blazing fast.
So that doesn't really like do anything for me. But nested checkboxes was the big concession. Like when you look at it, like that's what you're getting. You're getting nested checkboxes, and I was
nested
like,
nested checkboxes.
Do I like that? I don't know.
You get some labels. You get like some, you know. Yeah. Priority zero, in progress, stuff like that. You get attachments on the thing, on the to-do, which is kind of helpful. I don't know.
I like that. If they could be like aboard cards or something, because what I don't need is just like a clickable link to the thing. Like I want to see what the attachment is.
Right, right.
Like Notion does that pretty good. You know, if you drag an image into a Notion document, you see the image. Not so much with the PDF, but it gives you this big, nice clickable thing and you can open the PDF and it opens it like in a modal and you can see the PDF. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I need more than just I can attach something, although I do like that. And Things does not have that. You cannot put a file in a to-do in Things. It's kind of a missing feature, I think.
But then that is maybe also what makes it good is it's so shallow. You're like, okay, cool. Well, you know, this references this other document in Notion or something.
Could be. Sometimes you got to make hard choices like that. Yeah. And I could also see it ballooning the size of the database. You know, somebody drags in 1 4-megabyte JPEG, you know, you've freaking doubled the size of the database of the thing.
Yeah. Like, and if it's not structured well, that's going to come down in a like fetch all posts, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Unless you've got good filtering or whatever. So, I flirted with Obsidian. I like Obsidian. It's interesting to me, but it's very much like a project in itself, sort of like you set up all the rules and all the views and all that, you know, you kind of which is cool, but it was maybe not for me at this moment, just in time, just like I don't need another management project, I guess. So so I'm kind of comfortably in Notion, just like committing to something. I think there's something to be said about committing to a set of tools. Like these are just what I use, you know, like if something amazing comes along, I'll try it. But like, these are my tools and I'm going to get good at using these to manage my brain or manage my.
Yeah, you can really get productivity sniped, you know, where you're like, ooh, this productivity tool looks 2% better or something. Yeah, but you lost 3 days to it. You might have been wrong about the assessment to begin with. I really hear what you're saying. I'm like, just don't change for, just stop it.
There's something to be said about like the, you know, I don't know. I do think like, you know, I should say like productivity is for you. It's not like, don't like if your boss is like, hey man, you should like, you need to whatever, use this to-do list or whatever. I'd be kind of like, uh-oh, but like, I think like productivity is for you, figuring out what works for you and makes you feel good about getting things done that you need to get done.
That's a good sentiment. Yeah.
I use Analog from Ugmunk, the like analog cards that you write out. It's great, you know, in that ritual of like taking 5 minutes in the morning and be like, look at my, pull up my calendar, my digital calendar, that everything I've agreed to. And I write that down into a physical space. That's a very good ritual for me. It's basically just saying, it's giving my brain 5 minutes a day to like say, okay, what are we doing today? What's the most important thing to the scheduled things to the least important thing? You know, so, or what do I have scheduled? And then what's most important that I need to get done and what's least important? And it's, you know, the answer might surprise you.
I like it. It's not, you know, the different tools have different categories too. Like if you're really into a to-do app or a calendar or an email client or something, the cost of changing is high. And sometimes there's little tools, like there's one I really like CleanShot on Mac OS, that I just think is the nicest of the like take a screenshot quick. I might want to annotate it. I might want to upload it. I might want to add text to it. I might want to add a border to it. Like, oh, there's all these mites with a screenshot for me that handles them all pretty well. It might even be a movie. It might, you know, whatever. Might. To switch from something else to that, I feel like it's just like a one day. You know, you're like, oh, I just use this one now. Like, who cares? You know, the productivity change light, but changing an email client for me is a much bigger deal. But also that it's not necessarily the tool that provides the speed to, you know, I feel it happened. I just see that a lot in email. Like there's a new email client and it solves problems. And you're like, does it though? Because I think you managing your email better is the problem.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the client. Like you're just lazy about unsubscribing to things and managing what comes in. And I don't know, I have lots of thoughts about email, but a client isn't the solution.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like, I think I use like Apple Mail. I'm basic. Again, I'm a basic B. It works. It works fine for me. You know, the thing I do wish it did was like stopped all these dumb, like, have my boss on your podcast, or hey, you want me to get you a million tweets and TikToks, you know, like, and it's just like, dude, I wish that I could stop that. So it's when you have co-founder on your LinkedIn, it's your rip. It's the worst. It's the worst.
The worst. I feel you there, man.
I don't do it.
Do a dramatic reading of my, 'cause I have a different email for CodePen specifically. And I've leaned into that and being like, if it's CodePen related, I use that and make that pretty public too. It's no secret. It's just chris@codepen.io. And man, is it full of, it's not spam. It's farmed. I mean, I guess it's spam, but it's different. You know, sometimes I think of spam as like penis enlargement stuff or whatever that just goes to every email address in the world. This is like, hello, this is Jimmy Bobby Bob at Silversmith Venture Capital Incorporated Fund. We would like to talk to you this coming Monday. Here's a Calendly link. It's very important that your success, company success is success. Yeah.
Yeah. I had somebody like message me. This is just like my last email, you know, like that. I was like, oh yeah. They're like, we've identified this investment firm who like invested in Lero. We identified this investment company as somebody we'd like to talk to. Are you up to a 15-minute chat with our CEO to talk about investment firm? And I'm just like,
yep.
No. Like you should just talk to them. Like if you've identified them, send an email, cold call or what, you know, but I guess they're hoping for like an intro or something or like following. And then they like emailed me like 3 months later, literally 3 months on the dot, like almost to the minute. And they're like, are you interested in this opportunity? Please follow up, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm not going to hop on a 15-minute call. Just say what you need in an email, people. Just say like,
it's crazy. Yeah.
Say, can you intro me? Thank you.
It's a power dynamic thing. If, you know, they're trying to get you on the, because they know that, you know, they can play the human angle and they probably have a much higher success rate that way or whatever. Sales kind of operates that way. And if you're already a customer, I've you know, I work with some companies that just are always like, we got to talk, it's got to be a Zoom, you know, I'm like, no, yeah. It doesn't, you know? Yeah, but it's a power play. Whoever's got the most power can decide how the communication's going to go.
Well, and I bet I could like cruise through this. I could match the date of this email to the day they closed a 50 million round, you know, like I just could guarantee, like, I'm just, anyway, so they're good investors.
Must deploy capital.
I'm not going to say their name because we'll get more spam, but they're wonderful. Our investors in Lura are wonderful people. So.
Let's do I'm going to do a couple of quick errata ones. We talked about IndieWeb pretty specifically 10 episodes ago or so. And we said during it's like, there's not like a tutorial you can follow to be IndieWeb, which was just kind of a sentiment that was like, it's not like that. There's so many little aspects to it. There's so many different parts to it that it's not just like a checklist or something. It's not like do this one thing and then you're IndieWeb. It kind of is. It's kind of like have your own website is a, you know, that's the one big check box you could say to be IndieWeb. But there's just, you know, there's so many little aspects to it. What people actually mean is like, are you publishing to the Fediverse? Are you, you know, are you using the Posse thing? You know, that kind of thing. And we're like, there's no tutorial for that. But someone wrote in and said, there kind of is, though. It's indiewebify.me, and it's set up as a kind of level one, level two, level three things you can do. It's a pretty small little website, but I think it was worth calling out because it kind of is like, if that resonates with you, like, just tell me what to do. This kind of tells you what to do with increasing levels of...
I'm going to quiz you. How IndieWeb are you? Get your own domain name.
That's pretty low level. You got to do that.
Okay. Set up web sign-in. I'm already out. What? I think the something about link rel me microformat. Sure. I'm out.
It means okay. You can sign into your own website. I don't know. Is that really what it means? That you, in order to, you have to do special auth things even for your own website?
Let me see if I have it on my site. I'm going to test. Works perfectly. I'm using it to sign in or verify myself on Mastodon, which is a thing you can do. If you had a rel equals me on your website on Mastodon, you get a little green checkbox on your URL in Mastodon. Okay.
Not really signing into anything. That's just like a verification step. I don't know.
Publishing to the IndieWeb. Mark up your content. Profile notes articles with microformats too. I'm going to validate H-card. No H-cards found. But the box is green, so I'm going to count that. And then on my post, do I use it on my post? Let me see. Dave Rupert. And then we just go to any random post. Here's one about the mouth guard my dentist prescribed me. Let's see here.
There's no way you're going to pass this. We found an H
entry. I did it, my boy. What? Yeah.
Aw, you're good.
But I did not do
it's just like using specific class names. Or
DT published. And I have not syndicated.
I'm a little skeptical on using a prescribed set of classes, like the value that brings. I mean, I guess the value is IndieWeb cred, but I don't know. Like, is that real?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, it's like those are the first to go in a refactor because I forget what they were doing in the first place.
Right.
Like, it's like, why did I...
I could see it being like a little bit like
which H guy,
how you know, if you're going to style a button that is, has opened up a div somewhere, it's your like requirement to put RE expanded true on it. Right. As you well know.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to use that attribute then in, you know, don't have another attribute that says expanded or open. Just right. Use the RE attribute. You had to use it anyway. I could see that, like, you just use H-entry. You know, you had to use it anyway for your IndieWeb cred.
Right. So I should just be using H-entry. I'm not. Oops. I'm not using it to the best of my ability. And then step two of two, level two, is add web mentions. This is where I'm stuck. I haven't done that. And then reply context is the level three.
It's pretty hard. But to me, that does feel like a really beefy part of it is, like, there's two sides. There's like, you know, it's incoming stuff to your website. Like, oh my God, Jeremy talked about me. I'm going to have it automatically put something on my post with that data. That's hard, but cool, I think. Mm-hmm, you know, Adam Argyle's doing it pretty well on his site with lots of different incoming possibilities and stuff. You always lose me when you got to use Bridgy or whatever. I'm like, I don't want to, though. It seems good, but like too small of a, I don't know, it feels fragile, I'll say. And then,
well, for example, Bridgy got nuked in the whole Twitter thing, right? Like it didn't pass the.
They don't have Twitter anymore. And that for a while that past me would have felt like, oh, that's lame then, you know, like that's where so much conversation happens, that what value is this if it doesn't have that one? I don't feel that way anymore. But and then there's the outgoing too, which is even more interesting to me. Like when you hit publish, does it go to all of your social networks? Because then it's incentivizing you to, that's the number one indie web thing to me. Is that now I'm incentivized to do all of my content creation on my site, but I'm still taking part in the rest of the web. It's just that I didn't give my content to the silos. I kept the content. They can have the copy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, a little bit of a tutorial. Not bad.
So it exists. IndieWebify.me. It's cool. I might, you know, anyway, I'm probably overdue to play with web mentions. And so
if anybody can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. It feels like it's nice when you see like some social validation on a post, you know, if like you're trying to use that metric as like a establish your credit, you know, your street cred, then maybe that helps. You know,
it's lost data. Like what happens when, so if you only do it the one way I just talked about, like I published a post and it was about this X idea, chances are these days, if that hits Mastodon, because Mastodon is very techy, there's going to be some good replies to it on Mastodon. Like, did you think about this? What about this? Just good stuff. And sometimes I'm like, ooh, I should like screenshot that or copy it as a block quote or something and put it as a comment on the post if I have comments at all, because then that information isn't lost. To me, that the beauty of web mention is that it pulls that, puts it on the post automatically so that it's never lost. That it's become part of the canonical post.
Well, and I think, you know, mine's all going to be like, hey, typo, hey, typo, hey, typo.
In your database, so you delete them then. You know.
Goodbye. No typos in
typos in my were version. On purpose, actually.
It was an engagement hack. That's a t-shirt. Typos are my engagement hack, and it like spells engagement wrong or something.
That's an excellent idea.
That's good. Maybe we'll do a shop here for, because I could also do a Sundays are for RSS t-shirt. I think that would be good. So.
Oh, that's a nice one. Yeah. Yeah. And Gene, even just build websites is still a classic.
Yeah.
This is a great piece of follow-up. Who knows how many episodes it was ago. So sorry, but this is Matt writing in with a little story about Ultimate Guitar. If anybody's it's not even just a guitar site. It's just like tabs and chords and lyrics too. So if you have some song you're looking up, like how does that Pearl Jam song go or whatever, there's a real high chance that Ultimate Guitar, if you put that song chords at the top of your search, is going to be the one that comes up. They must just get an ungodly amount of traffic.
What's a Pearl Jam tabs? Like, I'm sure it has the chords, but then is it just like, what don't call me number. Yeah. It's just like one word. It's like,
Carbon Haber. Maybe that's tabbed out too, and herbs and gerbs.
Yeah, just lots of Unicode umlauts. So.
Mixed feelings on the site. Sometimes I'm like, this site's great. I'm glad it exists. There's so much good, important musical content on here. I'm glad somebody's doing it. You know, if you bite the bullet and sign up for Pro, it does get a lot cleaner. It has actually kind of useful features. It does kind of like, I'm like, okay, fine. You know. Also, there's a bunch of dark patterns on it. It's not that good. I can, you know, it's very easy to look at the site and be like, I can think of five things to clean up this page in 2 seconds. You know, like, please, God.
Yeah, for sure.
So mixed feelings, right? So Matt writes in, he's like, okay, a bunch of years ago, he's like, has all these same feelings about Ultimate Guitar, just is learning how to build websites and is like, I'm going to come up with a better one, with a better guitar tab experience, you know, superior to Ultimate Guitar. But then experiences the real world of building web products. So, you know, he makes this, you know, even his first prototype, he says, it's janky, not responsive. You know, it's this two-tab website. He enters into this competition. He lives in Australia and comes out as like the one of the top 10 emerging music technologies at an Australian music convention. Pretty cool, right?
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Damn right. This area does feel like it needs some disruption. And it's weird that you don't, it seems like you don't see newcomers in it all that often. Whereas if you look up, as I was earlier, markdown collaboration apps or something, there's 600 of them or something, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. But you don't see tab sites all that much. But he says, but someone from a record label pulled me aside at one point and explained that hosting tabs is a logistical nightmare. It isn't the same as playing music live or playing music at a public venue where there's some kind of blanket law. Instead, you need to have an individual license agreement with each artist whose tabs you are hosting. My understanding is that Ultimate Guitar was the only company to organize a bunch of lawyers to sort this out back in the day, and now they have a huge moat as a result, and no one else can enter the space. You may recall 10 to 15 years ago that there were a heap of guitar tab sites. They all disappeared around the same time. This is why Ultimate Guitar openly has dark patterns and general shittiness on the site. So there you go. Matt's just one guy, but seems like a pretty plausible story to me and jives with the experience I have with tabs on the web.
Oh, well, let me just pin a letter to the FTC about this monopoly.
Yeah, that's you, Dave, saying there should be more friggin' lawsuits in tech with stuff like that.
More lawsuits in tech.
Yeah, if Apple's getting sued, let's sue Ultimate Guitar too, you know?
Yeah, well, run everybody through the ringer once or twice. It's a little ridiculous. I mean, artists do like get money. You know what I mean? Like as an artist, you have the right to publish your own tabs, right? And so like if somebody comes along and is like, here's the tabs, I whatever made them up tonight, that's in theory lost revenue to you. But you know, it's just the way music has changed. Like that's just not how it works anymore. It's just like, somebody's going to steal your stuff. Your stuff is stolen the minute you put it out. So like,
I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like if you made a website that you went to a museum and you cataloged all the colors used in the paintings and then you published like paintingcolors.com, do you have to like have an agreement with the painters to be like, you used orange in that painting. Can I tell people that?
Yeah.
It seems similar to that. Like you used the G chord in this song. Can I tell people that?
Right.
It seems like, yeah, of course you can tell people that. But I don't know. It does feel different, like you said.
Could I have ChatGPT write some tabs for a very famous British pop band called
The Schmeedles?
The Boogles. The Schmeedles. And the site's just called Guitar Schmabs. And every band is just schmood. And then every song has some degree, 15% schmud, so you can work out the difference in your head. But it is purposefully royalty free or fair use.
Jeepers creepers, yeah. Schmirl schmam.
Schmirl jam is one of my favorite, and they kind of schmud their own their own vocals lyrics anyway. But yeah, no, I don't know. It would be I'd be curious. Yeah, it's funny, man. It's funny what makes things good, like guitar tabs, right? Like the reason we like music is because we share music. We pirated music on tapes and stole them off the radio and gave them to friends. And, you know, and like that made music good and popular. And then we stole a bunch of MP3s and then we gave them to people. And then Metallica's like, don't do that. And then, surprisingly, Metallica and the thing that makes it good is the openness and the sharing of music, right? The free flowing nature of it. But then, you know, then it gets kind of weird and locked down and a bunch of ads and spam and suddenly becomes not so good. You know, I'm all for artists getting paid, but it's interesting.
It's one of those huge unsolvable problems kind of, or I wouldn't say unsolvable. It probably does have solutions, but they are tricky. And it's just so easy to feel both ways at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
be like, oh, it's just music, man. Let it be free. How are you going to lock down something like that? Just this, it's just sound waves, yo. And then people being like, yeah, but I work really hard on that. My whole life is dedicated to it. And so if you say that all that stuff should be free, that means I don't get to exist in the world. And that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Or your sound waves sound like my sound waves. So you owe me money. That's also interesting to me as somebody who has played four chords before. It's really, yeah, it's tough. Yeah. I was in a conversation about the right to repair, about, you know, like farmers are hacking their tractors because John Deere makes you pay money to get like a software update to change your transmission or something like that. You know, it sort of stinks for a farmer because you're like, I need to plow a field, but instead I have to take it down to the John Deere shop. Then they have to hook it up to the machine. They charge me a $200 diagnostic test and then I can get the transmission, but I knew it was the transmission the whole time. So otherwise it won't start because it has the wrong part in it. So there's this whole thing of like, you know, they're pirating this software from Ukraine because people in Ukraine are like, I'm not going to the John Deere thing. I'm just going to write software to like fix my own tractor. And so it's just kind of cool. I like that. Just that idea that you can have the right to repair. So maybe you also have the right to Guitar Tab and you have the right to the Schmiedel's anthology and you, yeah. We'll see.
Well, thanks for all the follow-up, everybody. We have a little bit more of that. We'll try to sneak it in future episodes when we can. Get some guests going again here pretty soon, but we get feedback both ways. Some of y'all like the Dave and Chris special.
Yeah. Even if we just say rock stuff for half an hour, you tune in, and we really appreciate that. All right. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this new podcast. Just be sure to share our favorite episodes. Help people find out that show. Follow us on Mastodon. That's the good one. And join us over in the Discord, patreon.com/shoptalkshow. Thanks, everyone who joined recently. It's been very fun and nice. So thank you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to see?
Well, not that I can think of. Shoptalkshow.com.